This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2025, held at United Christian School in Napanee, Indiana, on February 28 and March 1, 2025.
Welcome to all of you. Thank you for joining us this morning. The year was 1936, right at the tail end of the Great Depression, just a few years before the World War II started. But in the midst of all those hard times, in the midst of food rations, starvation, there's something else going on out west. The sport of rowing had become a popular sport in the U.S. in the 1930s. Millions following the action on the radio and following what was going on in the sport of rowing. A lot of the big universities had rowing teams that were being formed, and it was a big competition. Most of this action was happening at the big universities on the East Coast. There certainly wasn't a lot of rowing talent on the West Coast. A lot of the big schools, as you know, Harvard, Yale, were on the East Coast, and that's where the big teams were at. But that year in Seattle had the University of Washington. They started recruiting 9 boys for their own rowing crew. After the tryouts, a team was formed comprised of 9 boys. These boys came from lower class families, small towns, dairy farms, logging communities, shipyards. They were certainly not the pick of the bunch as far as sportsmen. One of the boys' names was Joe Rance. Joe came from a really tough situation. His family actually abandoned him at 14 years old, they headed back east, left him there to fend for himself. He literally foraged through the woods for berries and fished, and that's how he survived during the Depression on his own at 14 years old. So some tough backgrounds came out of this. Rowing is an incredibly hard sport, difficult sport. Many would agree that it's the most physically demanding of any sport of all. Rowing a 2,000 meter race, a rower puts about the same amount of energy as 2 back-to-back NBA basketball games. It's incredible. And all that happens in just 6 minutes. That's the amount of energy that gets consumed by rowing at the speed which they do. Also, it consumes about as much energy. One person rowing consumes as much energy as a thoroughbred horse at a full gallop. That's how much energy and oxygen they're consuming. But these guys are out there in Seattle. It's winter. They're practicing January, February, March. It's snowy, it's wet, it's rainy, it's windy. These untrained boys started working really, really hard. They started to row in sync with each other. They started rowing like a team. It's no surprise they actually started to win a few small races that spring of 1936. We'll come back to the story a little bit later. Good morning and welcome. I'm so excited to be here with you this morning. This subject of teamwork I'm really, really passionate about it. I love the word team. I love building teams and being on teams. Very passionate about that. So I'm excited to share with you this morning things that I've learned, failures that I've made in being part of the team and leading teams. UCS, the school that we're here today, is a great school. I grew up here. This is where I grew up. My kids all go to school here. My oldest son just graduated last May from UCS here. So I think it's fair to say I'm very invested in this school, as many of you are in your schools. When I was here in school, though, I was never great at any sports. I couldn't play basketball. I was terrible at softball. That's a super embarrassing thing for me. I enjoyed football, was never great at that either, to be honest, at all. In fact, we were at a roller skating rink with our church just this past Wednesday night, 3 days ago. And I was there racing around the rink there, and one of my friends was laughing. He said, "Ryan, I didn't know you skate." And I said, "It's the one sport I can actually do. I can roller skate or rollerblade." So if we were picking teams here at this gym for basketball this morning, I'd be on the sidelines here. I would have been the last one probably picked. And I'm okay with that. Maybe it was harder years ago, but I didn't learn a whole lot of teamwork from sports growing up, but I certainly have learned some teamwork in the past 30 years working with things in business, things in numerous boards that I serve on and do serve on, including the school board here today. I've come to understand just how important teamwork really, really is in any organization. It can literally make or break an organization of any kind. Teamwork becomes almost everything. Not finance, not strategy, not technology. It is teamwork that remains the ultimate competitive advantage, both because it is so powerful and so rare. If you could get all the people in an organization rowing in the same direction, You could dominate any industry in any market against any competition at any time. For many years, author and speaker Pat Lencioni, who wrote this quote here, has used the sport of rowing as the perfect analogy for teamwork. I've used this quote many times over the years. It comes from the book, Five Dysfunctions of a Team, The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. And so we'll look at that a little bit later here. But I had no idea as I was using this over the past decade. I just never really studied rowing like I have recently here. I didn't really understand how much effort it really took to row in sync as a team, and what it takes to build that team, and the fact that they're just seconds and portions of seconds apart from each other when they're competing like this. I want to read this slowly one more time. I want to make sure. I don't know how many of us want to dominate or maximize or dominate our industries or dominate our schools. But I certainly think we want to maximize what God has entrusted us with here, and build schools that are impactful and that lead the pack in education. So again, it's not finance, it's not strategy, it's not technology, it's teamwork that remains the ultimate competitive advantage, both because it's so powerful and it's so rare, guys. It's so rare. If you can get all the people in your organization, your school, your board, rowing in the same direction, you could dominate any industry, in any market, against any competition at any time. You guys ever get hungry at night, maybe after a long school board where the chairman goes 2 hours late, and you get home, you haven't had dinner yet, and you throw a DiGiorno's pizza in the oven, and you really plan to eat the whole thing yourself, but the kids are all in bed, so you start out with three pieces, but there's three left, so what are you going to do? You just down the whole pizza. How do you think you're going to sleep that night if you down that whole pizza? Any ideas?
Heartburn.
Yes. Heartburn, nightmares. Your dreams will look a little bit probably like this during the middle of that night. Don't make a whole lot of sense. I would call that a nightmare. They don't make any sense, but that's what junk food can do for us sometimes. It can make us dream some crazy stuff. Sometimes you might even wake up in a cold sweat thinking the world's ending, and that's what a nightmare does to you. I assume that everyone in this room has had has a lot of investment in the school that you're involved with. Show of hands. How many of you guys are invested and you have a lot of dreams about the school that you're involved with? It's probably true where you wouldn't be here this morning. How many of you would say you have a vision to make a vision and a dream into the school as great as you can? You guys agree with that? But do you know what the definition of a nightmare is? A nightmare is far worse. The nightmare that's far worse than what's on the screen here. The definition of a nightmare is a great dream with a bad team. So you can have all the dreams for the school that you want, but the people that are around your tables, that are in your classrooms, aren't part of that team. It's a nightmare. It truly is a nightmare. There's probably nothing that you can think of more that's kept you up at night more than drama on a team that you're serving on, either currently today or in the past. It could be the principal of the school that's fighting against the board. It could be teacher drama that's going on in your school right now. I'm guessing everyone in this room has one person that you're thinking of right now that either was a problem on a team in the past or is on your team right now that you're thinking of. I can think of one right now. Maybe that team member is currently causing nightmares for you. We cannot run successful schools with bad teams. Teamwork is so powerful and it's so rare because most leaders aren't willing to deal with the hard things that are happening on their teams. And especially, I would say, in school settings and nonprofit settings, it's really, really difficult. At work, you might be able to fire the farmhand, Carlin, that doesn't do a good job for you. But in a nonprofit, we just tend to just kind of sugarcoat the whole thing, say, yeah, he'll get off in 3 years, we'll be fine. I would beg this morning to differ from that. I don't know that that's okay anymore. There's more at stake. There's a lot at stake in our schools. And we're not going to get to run successful schools and to impact our kids for eternity with leaders and teams of leaders that are doing it half-baked. How many of you are old enough to remember Michael Jordan in the 90s? You guys remember MJ? Okay. Everyone likes to argue who the GOAT in basketball is, greatest of all time. By now, you all know it's not me, of course. I can hardly dribble the ball. But if you're a teenager or an adult in the 90s, you just know. MJ was the greatest. He was the GOAT. But he didn't do it alone. Michael believed in teamwork. What Jordan the Chicago Bulls accomplished in the 90s is nothing short of absolutely incredible. Six national championships in 8 years. It's never been done before or since. It's incredible. Ironically, the middle 2 years there, you look at the middle 2 years there between 93 and 96, that's the 2 years that Michael wasn't playing. He retired temporarily. I'm not sure what he was thinking. He wanted to play baseball for 2 years. And so he left for 2 years, came back and won three more. Absolutely incredible. The Bulls were the first team in NBA history to win 70 games in a single season. But Jordan was our leader, but he also realized that it takes teamwork to make the dream work. And he got that. And he talks about teamwork. Michael Jordan said, talent wins games, but teamwork and intelligence win championships. I don't know about you guys, but I don't want to just play this game, the game of education, the game of team. I'm in this to win the championship. I care about the education of my kids, and I care about the education of your kids as well. I think every one of you do care about the kids that are in your house and all the kids, also the kids that you're representing as boards and as teams of boards. Winning a game is short-term. Winning the championship is eternal, guys. It's my kids, it's your kids' souls at stake. It takes teamwork to run our schools like Michael ran the Bulls and the Bulls team. John Maxwell says, one is too small a number to achieve greatness. No accomplishment of real value has ever been achieved by a human being working alone. Speaking of AI, right? It's impossible for to get truth and to get, it takes a team of people and brains thinking to really do great things. Teamwork on your board is not a nice little bonus. It's not just a great plus. It's gonna make or break the success of your school. One is too small of a number. Nobody needs to be the hero. If you guys have your handout sheets there, I'll try to kind of keep you going here. The last few minutes here, we're just talking about the power of teamwork and what that does. And next I wanna jump into just what it takes to lead a team is a great leader. You can't have a great team without somebody leading that team, somebody calling the shots, somebody organizing that team to run in sync. And on that rowing team, there's one guy that's not rowing. The ninth guy is not rowing. He's leading the team. He's calling what they're doing now, and he's keeping them in sync. Jesus always led his disciples. He always pointed the way. I'm curious, how many in the room today are board chairmen? I'm just curious. Currently? Okay, current board chairmen, thank you. How many of you guys have been a chairman in the past? Curious. Great. That's probably a third or half of you guys that are or were chairman at one point in time. How many of you are principals by any chance? We got a nice amount of principals. You guys are all leading. I just want to just stress this morning that this is a calling. Don't shrug it off. Don't minimize what you're doing in leading your teams, whether it's a team of staff as principals, whether it's leading the board as a team there. Maximize it. Use your calling and lead this team to do great things for your school. Have vision. Lead your team with vision. And Jesus showed us so beautifully how to do that. And so don't minimize what God has called you to do. Don't look at it and shrug your shoulders down and say, well, the lot fell on me. Let's not be that. We can do, God has called us to lead and to do great things in the schools. So while you're in that position for 5 years, for 10 years, please maximize that. Consider that a calling on your life and give it your all while you're doing that. The future depends on that. Behind every great team is a great leader. The good leader is the one who points the direction and says, we're going this way. We heard yesterday from James that everything rises and falls on leadership in James' session yesterday, and I couldn't agree more. You can't have a great team without a great leader. It rises and falls on the person who's leading that team and his ability to gel the team together. Jesus was the ultimate example of leading, serving his team, and showing the way. So John Maxwell also says a leader knows the way and shows the way. A great leader is the first one there. He's the last one to leave. He prepares an agenda that's detailed and organized. He gives vision to the team. He served the team. Tony enjoyed Tony's session yesterday about that. It was great. And talking about leading that, leading a board meeting. It's the leader's job to build trust with the team, maybe like this guy's doing here. And so I just want to encourage you, if you're leading your teams, tell them where we're going. We're going this way. The guy's pointing it there. This is where we're going, guys. We're going this way. We're not going over there. This is where we're going. It doesn't mean you're a control freak. It doesn't mean everything has to go your way. That's not what I mean at all. A leader's a servant. But you're showing, you're selling the vision of where we're going. We can do bigger things, we can do greater things. That's what a leader does. And so a team that has no leader, like Jesus was to us, like he was to his disciples, they'll be lost. And where there's no vision, the people perish. We all know that. It's a leader's job to build trust with his team, maybe a little bit like this guy's trying to build trust with his team. Check this out.
And it'll be an exercise in building trust between one another. So Harrison, if you don't mind going first, step up here on this chair and close your eyes. All right, and then everybody fill in. And we're going to ask you to fall, and then they will catch you. So you have to trust us. I'm going to count to three. Just relax and fall, okay? One, two, three. No!
That's the definition of a nightmare, right? So sometimes we think we trust each other on our teams. There often could be things in the past, there could be things that are there that are keeping trust from happening on our teams. And we think we're clear, we're crystal clear. We said we're going this way, everybody else is walking that direction. All because the leader wasn't really clear on where we're going. The agenda wasn't clear, the minutes weren't clear. Now we don't know what's going on, we're heading in the wrong direction. Or it wasn't communicated to the principal the next Monday morning about where we're heading as a school because of the decision that got made. So make sure there's trust in your team. So maybe there needs to be a conversation happening around trust in the team that you're building. So we've learned how important a team is. We know that a team needs a great leader. Now let's take a little bit of look at what the recipe is for a great team. In the book I mentioned earlier, Pat Lencioni talks about the five dysfunctions of the team. That's kind of the negative side of a team. It's the dysfunctions of the team. I want to just read through these briefly here, but I really want to focus on the positive side more than the negative side here. But Pat says the base of the triangle there is an absence of trust. When the dude that just fell there, do you think he's going to trust? You think he'll speak up at the next board meeting? Probably not. So when there's an absence of trust there, you don't have the ability to speak up at a meeting or the ability to say something that your scary rails is going to throw food at you. And so the absence of trust is dangerous. Then there's the fear of conflict. I just don't want to ruffle any feathers. I don't want to, let's just all be friends here. And that's a dysfunction of the team. There needs to be healthy conflict in a team. And you're not arguing and screaming, but you're wrestling through the tough stuff that it takes to do this well. Lack of commitment. Guys showing up late. Guys not getting done what they said they're going to get done. I just can't make the meeting tonight. I know that I had something to prepare, but I just can't be there. I had to work late. That's not acceptable on a team that's this important. Avoidance of accountability. So we don't want to, hold anybody accountable. Do your best. I know you all love Dave Jobs, but do your best. And if it's month four on that little project that you've ignored, we'll have grace for you. That's not accountability. We can't avoid accountability. And then at the top of the peak there's inattention to results, which means you're not getting anything done. The needle's not getting moved forward. You're not climbing the mountain. You're not getting better. The culture's not getting better. There's nothing happening. The teachers aren't getting hired. So just digging into, these are the five answers on your sheets there. Digging into what does a great team look like? What's the opposite of these dysfunctions? So I just flipped this around, put trust on top. The opposite is just complete trust. A team that sits around the table with complete trust for each other, knowing that we got each other's backs. These guys, they're not going to laugh at me if I say something that's crazy, wild idea, that's a BHAG. They got me. I also trust them to help me out if I'm going the wrong way. That's a beautiful thing. Healthy conflict is really good. It's not a negative thing. Conflict is great around a team. And not everybody's got the same idea. And so coming together in that way with healthy conflict is extremely important. Solid commitment. Commitment to be there. Commitment to be there on time. Commitment to dig in and fold up these chairs after the session today. If you're a board member here, consistent accountability and saying, we're going to hold you accountable, Bob or Jim, to get that done. It's really, really important. That has to happen. And if we don't have that answer by the next meeting, we can't hire teachers. We got to have the new salaries figured out. And so if the treasurer shows up without a budget for salaries, you won't be able to get that done. So the commitment and accountability is extremely important. And then you start just to get expected results. When you have all the other four done, guess what happens? Results happen. The needle gets moved forward. Culture starts changing. It's beautiful. These are the characteristics that I would say make a great team, make a great culture. And so just making sure you have those: complete trust, healthy conflict, solid commitment, consistent accountability, and then expected results starts to just become a normal. We do this, we agree to do this, Jim comes back with those answers, it's done. We make a decision, we move on, and the needle gets moved forward. Now that we've looked at some of the characteristics of a productive team, I'd like to just jump into some of the rewards. I have three rewards there that a productive team will experience if you're starting to gel and rowing in sync like this as a team. Well, let's look at some of these rewards. First, what I have here is synergy. I love the word synergy. When a board is aligned as a team, all that trickles down, all that synergy trickles down to the students and promotes a healthy culture in our schools, and it creates a synergy around, you know, not only the board, not only the administrator, the principal, also the staff, and also to the students. It's a beautiful thing. We have some educators in the room here. Somebody want to just give me a definition of the word synergy? What does the word synergy mean in your best one-line sentence?
2 + 2 = 5.
Great. That's a great answer. That's a great answer. 2 + 2 = 5. I'd love to say 8, but yeah, I like 8 better, but that's good. It's close. What I describe synergy as definition is it's when the whole is greater than the sum of all the parts. And it's a beautiful word. And it's a powerful reward. I'd like to share an example this morning about a team of horses here. I think it's a powerful example of what synergy can be in a school and in any organization that you're serving in. So a single draft horse, you guys maybe have seen this on the internet, a single draft horse can pull 8,000 pounds. And that's pretty common. It's a good draft horse that's used to pulling that plow through the field, and they can do a good job. So two draft horses, a team of draft horses should be able to pull 16,000 pounds. And the answer is no, it actually doubles. A well-trained team of draft horses actually could pull 32,000 pounds. So it's 4x as much as that one horse can pull alone. That's the beauty of synergy. How's that even possible? It almost feels like it's magic, but it compounds. Synergy compounds. And so when your team is working together and everybody's rowing together, you get way more done than those 6 board members get done. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. It's that way. It can be that way in business. It can be that way in any team that you're serving on. So the power of synergy compounding is powerful. The next one I'd like to look at is momentum. Teamwork creates unstoppable momentum. It's one of my favorite words. I have a lot of favorite words, but this is one of them. It's just a beautiful word. It's not like Mr. Trump there. It's just a beautiful word. He said that about tariffs a few weeks ago. But I would like to say it's about momentum. Momentum is a beautiful word. James talked yesterday about how hard we as a board worked here to push that snowball uphill a few years ago. And I was here. It was rough. It was tough. The negativity was thick. We were literally pushing a snowball up the hill. It's really, really hard to do that. And it wants to break apart. It wants to fall apart. Nothing's happening on its own. But momentum is when you get over the crest of that hill and it starts rolling downhill just a little bit. Maybe it's a flat spot now. You're starting to roll. You can actually push that snowball. And then when it starts rolling and it starts going downhill, it gets bigger with every revolution. Snow starts packing. That's when people want to get on board with your school. They're like, see what's going on over there? Something's happening at UCS. Something's happening at Liberty Christian School, whatever your school is called. It's amazing. And I want to be part of that. That's what momentum does. Now there's people signing up and the kindergarten classroom's full. That's what happens with momentum. I want to be part of what they're doing over there. And you're not pushing that snowball uphill anymore. When people start to see what's going on, they want to jump on your bandwagon, and they want to be part of what you're doing. Momentum Momentum makes you look better than you really are. But when it's God's work, it's beautiful. So I feel like it's a little dash of favor that God gives us sometimes. You're doing everything right, you're working hard, and God says, now the snowball starts rolling. And I think that's favor from God at times. When a team keeps rowing in unison, the snowball starts rolling. Momentum takes you further and takes you there faster than you can get there without it. The third thing there is a team that promotes a healthy culture. And so all of that, just that momentum, the synergy, the culture is a really big deal. And so when the board is aligned, the board's rowing in the same direction, the administrator, the principal feels all that as well. And guess what happens? The staff all starts feeling that. The staff wants to be part of that team. They're feeling momentum. They want to be here. They want to re-sign the contracts for next year. Why not? This place is going somewhere. We know where we're heading, where we're going, and that culture just oozes out to the students. Now high school wants to be there. High school wants to graduate here. High school wants to be involved in a Bible class and learn all this stuff. They want to mentor the young kids, which is happening here. I just told Miss Annie, she's here, Miss Ann. I call her Miss Ann. Ann Lightlinger is one of the high school students here. Well, she's a mentor to my 7-year-old first grader here. I told her, I said, man, Asher just thinks the sun rises and sets on you. I mean, Anna is just, she is, I think they spend 1 hour a month with them. I think that's what is that what it is, Jonathan? I think it's 1 hour a month. And I mean, Annie can just do absolutely no wrong. And Asher thinks she's just amazing. Because these high school students are trying to pour into the first graders, the second graders, the third graders. And just, it just means a lot. That's what culture can do. Momentum and synergy are happening. And it's a beautiful thing. Take a little look at Jesus and his team of disciples and how that compares to your team and your board. The 12 disciples were perhaps one of the most unlikely teams in history. These guys would probably not necessarily ever serve on a board together on their own without Jesus bringing them together and Jesus calling them. Matthew was a hated tax collector. Simon was a radical zealot. Judas was a thief and a cheating businessman. Most of the others were uncultured fishermen who couldn't talk or express themselves very well. How did this ragtag team of men change the world? They did. They changed the world forever. They were united by a common goal. They were a team. And Jesus called them and pulled them together and led them and showed the way and taught them how to be a team. What does your team look like? What does it look like to sit around your tables where you have meetings? Please pardon my AI version, timely AI version here. I didn't even see the talk ahead of me was about AI until he was talking this morning. Perhaps the only accurate thing about this AI description of an Anabaptist board meeting is the food around the table. That does seem right and proper. So I want to challenge you this morning to just, we're going to dive into a couple slides about you envisioning your team this morning. And what happens around your tables. So I just want to go through a couple slides that are around this. So whoever those people are around your table, picture them to be yours, okay? First of all, I want to look at the diversity of the team. And by diversity, I'm not talking about DEI agendas that are all over the news right now, nothing like that. I'm talking about diversity in how we see things as brothers, as sisters, as Christians, and how we process things, how our life experiences change how we see things. It's powerful. I want all you guys to see the beauty around the people that are sitting around your tables. Maybe one of them is not beautiful. Maybe there's problems. We'll hit that next. But see the beauty of everybody seeing things differently than you do. I can't tell you how many times that I've sat around a board meeting here at this school. Agenda's planned, agenda's sent out, and I show up at a board meeting 99% sure I know the solution to item number 4. I got it. I know exactly where we need to go. In fact, I'm so sure I don't even know why we need to talk about it. I could pretty much just railroad it through or just say my piece, and that's what we're going to do, because I know I'm right about that. I can be a little stubborn. Any of you guys stubborn ever? Anybody here stubborn at all? Okay. We think we got a plan. But you know what's the most amazing thing about a good team, a good board, is their ability, when there's trust, of course, when there's trust around the table, the ability to let them change your mind. It's a beautiful thing. Trust them to let them change your mind. Help you see things from a different perspective that you didn't think about before. I have left so many meetings completely heading 180 degrees from when I got there that evening, and I feel fantastic about it. I know it's right. I know that I was wrong. I feel great about it. We're heading that way now. I was going to head that way. Thanks, brothers. That was stupid. You saved us from a crazy train wreck, right? So that's a beautiful thing. When the diversity around the table in your team can help shift and actually make the right decision, and you bring things out that you never thought of before. It's beautiful. So put some names around these faces around this table. Who's the most engaged around this table? The guys you have pictured there, the ladies you have pictured there, whoever they are. Who's the weakest link around that table? Is it you? You add more value than anybody else there, or are you the weakest link around that table? How much value are you adding around the table that you're sitting around the team you are? A chain is only as strong as the weakest link, friends. Another question I have for you. Would you trust the school board that you sit on now? And I apologize if you're not on school board, so I'll just say school board, staff committee, whoever that is. Would you trust them to be the strategic advisors to your financial portfolio or of your business? Would you trust these group of men or ladies to run your personal finances, to run your businesses? Would you? I'm convinced that the school board should be just as high functioning of a team as what our businesses and financial advisors are. We're pretty crazy about the nuts and bolts in our businesses, making sure our bank account is balanced and all that. And we manage it pretty good and making sure every dollar is where it's supposed to be at. We really care about that. But we show up once a month here and we, whatever. It is what it is. I'll do my best and I didn't get it done, no big deal. So would you elect this board to give vision, to be an advisory member of your own company, the business that feeds your family, puts bread on your table? Would you feel good about that? If they would all give what you give around that team and row as hard as what you're rowing and working on till midnight on a Tuesday night to get ready for something for next week because you know it's important, or going to see a potential teacher, whatever that is. How much more important is the organization training our children than any company you own or manage? 10x, it's no comparison. But somehow we kind of just, whatever, it's okay. I'll give my 3 hours. Sorry, I heard it was two and a quarter hours. What was the ideal? Was that you, Tony, yesterday? 2.25 hours. If that's the normal, I know we failed a lot. So anyhow, ours were longer. But if the answer is no, that if you couldn't trust your team to hand your portfolio, your business, everything you have, then maybe we should reassess that. It's more important than anything we have personally. The stakes are too high to tolerate complacency. Just like the 9 boys in the boat wouldn't have allowed even one of the rowers to flake out or not pull his share of the load. There's no way. The stakes are too high to accept complacency. How quickly do you guys respond to a text or to an email during the week? How many of you guys have a board or a committee group text that you have going on? All right, and obviously you have email that you're responding to. How many days does it go till you respond to a text from the chairman? Curious. Hey guys, think about something here. We got to figure this out before next week. How well do you guys do with that? If it's your business, you'll respond in 20 minutes, 5 minutes. If it's your money, you probably do. But so often things just get stuck and hung out there and the chairman's left to dry on an answer. Finally, you just call 4 people because you're not sure what to do. Because I just didn't get to it. But it's important. How often do you engage between the monthly board meetings? A board who engages once a month will never take a school to its maximum potential. If all you do is 3 hours a week, that's all you give, it's not enough. It won't get you there. So I just want to challenge you this morning. How good of a team member are you? How would you rate your engagement from 1 to 10 this morning? I really like what Jonathan shared yesterday morning as he was wrapping up his session and stuck with me. He asked a question and I would just reiterate it here this morning. If you can't do it well, if this is too big for you, then resign. It's not worth it. If you can't do a good job with excellence, just resign because it's a bigger deal than that. If you can't give it what you think needs to be done. And I think we as board leaders or board chairmen need to set a tone for the boards that looks a little more like that. And like it's the stakes are high. Let's look at it that way. What I think we should consider is very clear expectations on the front end of joining a board. I don't think we do great at that. We kind of say, here's the deal, your first meeting. Hey, the chips and Pepsi are here pretty soon. And we're gonna dig in and here we go. And there's not a whole lot of expectations set ahead of time. I think we could do better at doing that. If somebody is flaking out, not pulling their load a year and a half in, that there's a serious conversation about that and possibly even a replacement, because it matters that much. And so again, the people that win, the teams that are winning, they don't have weak members. They're winning because everybody's rowing together. You will never have a great team without a team filled with top-notch members who are adding value at every single meeting. The team must be engaged every event. They need to be the guys who are there at 11:15 cleaning up the chairs after an event, putting away tables, even though they're tired. That's the guys that make a board, a team work and function. One more here is, are you engaged for the mission? Are you there for the Coke and the cookies? Far too many times, the most qualified people we have to take seats on boards are too busy to sit on the board for 5 or 10 years. And maybe it's because we haven't sold the vision for our school well enough as we should have. And unfortunately, some of the guys that around the table are there for the Coke and the cookies rather than passionately fighting for the lives of our children. Is there a guy sitting on your board right now who hasn't got the plumbing fixed for the last 3 months, but when his face lights up when the snack shows up at 7:45? Does that feel familiar to any of you guys? Because we have those people. They're there. And my dad sat on many boards. My dad's gone now, but he used to call them cookie eaters. They just loved to be there, smiling and eating away, and never had anything to add, never raised their hand to volunteer. They loved the snack. You know, that's what they were there for. And that's a reality. And now that I've served on a number of boards, I see it. It's like there's just people around the table that they're really not going to add a lot. They're never going to raise their hand. Going around the table, they got nothing to add. But they sure love the snacks. So don't be a cookie eater this morning. Many of you drove here today, Thursday or Friday this week, and you probably saw a semi, drove right past a semi that looked like this year. DOT requires that we clearly mark for hauling something that's flammable, dangerous, or toxic. Is there anyone on your board this morning or your team that should have a warning sign on their foreheads? I don't know if we want to actually label somebody as toxic, but maybe we should. Maybe we should put a sign on somebody's forehead if they are toxic. And this would be the worst possible person on your team. Somebody who slacks a little bit, who doesn't get the job done, that's one thing. But when there's truly poison or toxicity on your team, it will kill trust, it will kill teamwork faster than anything else. Sometimes it starts slowly, starts subtly at times, but sometimes it's actually blatant, and it's unacceptable. If there's a team member in your camp or on your team that's poisonous, I gotta admit that it needs to be dealt with quickly. And I just thinking back to some of our board experiences in the past, there's times where it was there, and there was times when we weren't all rowing in the same direction at all, and it felt like there was loyalties elsewhere, and not rowing for the team. And I admit things weren't dealt with as quickly as it should have been. And the difference, the change when that does get dealt with, or the board member gets voted off, is massive. And so think about what you could do to take care of this problem. By all means, don't vote that person back on, if nothing else. If you do nothing else, don't vote him up, vote him on again if there's another term available for him. Please, please protect your team more than that. Towering a bad board or team member only causes more pain. About 2 weeks ago, I was talking to our sales team in the company that I work at. And we had some drama going on, we had issues going on there, and I was trying to get them to go this way. Guys, we're going this way. And the poison, the drama that I'm sensing in the team, it was happening, is poisonous, it's toxic, it's gonna kill this team. And unfortunately, a week later, we decided to terminate one of the A players on that team, and I guess he didn't get the message. And so we had to put him on a 90-day performance improvement plan. That didn't fix it, and there was HR saying we probably shouldn't. He's not that bad, and we as leaders decided no, it is that bad. This guy was a top seller. We lost one of our top salesmen last week. He had just won an award the week before for some of the best numbers in 2024, but he was missing it in one area. He was missing his attitude. His attitude did not line up with our values. He was poison to our team, and it was spreading fast. And we made the tough decision to let him go just last week. And what's crazy about that is that we're still dealing with all of that this week. So it's not over yet. He's gone. We still have drama floating. He had created so much problems underneath that there's people now that have problems with how we handled him because of all the poison that he had sowed. And so just be aware of that. Fight toxicity with whatever you can, whether it's staff, whether it's your principal, whether it's a board member. Demand better. Just because we're nonprofits, just because we're Christian school boards, doesn't mean we can't deal with hard problems and tough problems and expect more from our team. We can be kind, we can be respectful, but we can be clear on what we're called to do. Is it not worth doing this thing well, guys? Is it not worth it? Is it not worth giving your all? Don't settle for a team that is less than. Work willingly at whatever you do as though you were working for the Lord rather than for people. Remember that the Lord will give you an inheritance as your reward, that the master you are serving is Christ. This is God. These are God's schools, not our schools. He's stewarded you guys in this room, stewarded us with managing these schools, with training our children in the ways of God. Let's take it very, very seriously. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. So I'd like to take this quote that we read earlier and make it a little more personal just for you, those of you in this room here. I rewrote this a little bit, and I think it applies with where we're at today. Not finance, not strategy, not curriculum. It is teamwork that remains the ultimate competitive advantage, both because it is so powerful and so rare. If you could get all the people in your school rowing in the same direction, you could dominate any Christian school in any community against any educational system at any time. This morning, what's keeping you from striving to win at your school? Are you striving to be your best? Are you striving to build that team? And what's keeping you from being the best team member on your school board or on your committee or your staff team? So just a little recap here. We talked about the power of teamwork, the fact that productive teamwork needs a great leader. We talked about five healthy characteristics that a team has: trust, conflict, commitment, accountability, and results. And then the rewards of that gelling, of that rowing together is three things: compound synergy, unstoppable momentum, and a healthy culture. Let's jump back into 1936 again. A few months later that year, these same boys went on to defeat the University of California in the Pacific Coast Regatta of the West. So these guys kept going. So they won the Western race against the University of California. Then they headed east to the big boy schools and where they were at. That's where the real talent was at. There they raced against Syracuse, Columbia, Navy, Pennsylvania, and Cornell. They beat them all to win the national championship. This is a farm boys. These are boys that weren't doing this before that year. They beat them all in the national championship. It was almost as if nothing could stop them. That's how momentum works on a team. They couldn't be stopped. They weren't done yet. This was 1936, the year of the Summer Olympics in Berlin, Germany, where the best rowers in the world competed. Then this team was selected to represent the USA in the Summer Olympics that year in Berlin. It was the very first ever televised Olympics that year, so the entire world was watching these boys, cheering for them, rooting for them. The whole world was watching, and including Adolf Hitler was there cheering on his boys, his German boys that day. Nobody knew how much was happening and brewing in Berlin there. They had covered up really well what was going on in the Jews and the camps and things that were happening there already, that just a few short years later, other boys would be back, troops would be back in a much different mission. But Adolf was there watching that day as well, and these boys faced amazing obstacles, unbelievable obstacles. Insurmountable obstacles. The long trip to Europe left some of the team members feeling sick, and one even had pneumonia. On top of that, the Germans were unfair with lane assignments, go figure, on the day of the race. Out of the eight teams, Germany took the best lane, and USA got the worst lane. No joke. There was bad weather. Everything was against them. So picture a team who's sick from the long trip, one has a pneumonia, they're put in the worst lane of all, and the Germans are on the top list. And if we understand, I think Hitler was pretty upset that of the outcome that day. They had a troubling start to the race, putting them in place in the last place for quite some time of the race. Most of the crowd and the USA fans had lost hope pretty quickly because it looked like it was over. They were far in the rear there. But somehow through the grueling 2,000 meter race, they went from last place to fifth place, from fifth place to third place. Ended up winning gold by 6/10 of a second in 1936. This is what teamwork did in 1936. This is what teamwork can do for your school. These nine men in the boat stayed friends for the rest of their lives, regularly got together until the last one passed away just in 2009. They were a team. They stayed a team. They even got back in a boat every 10 years and did a race every 10 years, just for fun. And I'd like to read some thoughts in closing here that I think sums up what team meant to them as a team. From 9 to 1, I think that's the goal. Whatever your board number is, from 7 to 1, from 6 to 1, from 9 to 1. When everyone rose together at the same rhythm and intensity, the shell feels lighter than air and moves accordingly. They call this the swing. Many crews, even winning crews, never really find it. It only happens when all 8 oarsmen are rowing in such perfect unison that no single action by anyone is out of sync with those of all the others. Only then will the boat continue to run unchecked, fluidly and gracefully between poles of the oars. Only then will it feel as if the boat is a part of each of them, moving as if it's on its own. Many crews never really find the swing, and many others experience it only occasionally. That's because finding the elusive swing means not just rowing your hardest, but rowing in harmony. It's not up to you to row the boat across the finish line all by yourself. Instead, a well-rowed race is like a symphony, and yourself is just one player in the orchestra. If one fellow was playing out of tune, the whole piece would naturally be ruined. Even while absolute harmony is the goal, each rower must also fulfill their specific roles. To get into harmony with your teammates, you must put your trust in them. If you don't like some fellow in the boat, you have to learn to like him. It has to matter to you whether he wins the race, not just whether you do. That trust in each other is ultimately the secret of the swing. When you really start trusting the other boys in the boat, you will feel a power at work within you that is far beyond anything you've ever imagined. Sometimes you feel as if you would have rowed right off the planet and are rowing among the stars. I think this sums up what God has called us to as a team. God has trusted you with the lives of 9 students in your school, maybe 109 if you're the principal, or if you're a board in charge of that many students. They may be uncultured, they may be untrained, may come from some tough family situations, but can you turn your school to do what this team did in 1936, turn it from 9 to 1? Thank you.